A simple balloon floated between father and son in a nursing home, a moment so ordinary yet so profound it would reshape everything. There sat a man who never played catch with his boy, arms raised in hope, waiting. After 3 decades guiding over 1,000 families through their darkest hours, Rabbi Steve Letter thought he understood death. But watching his father reduced to this childlike state, he discovered something startling. All his professional wisdom about grief meant nothing when it became his own. This wasn't theory anymore. This was his father, his loss, his turn to walk through the valley he'd helped so many others navigate. What emerged from this journey reveals a truth we spend our lives avoiding, that death, far from being our enemy, might actually be our greatest teacher about how to live. Here's what shocks most people. After visiting nearly 1,000 dying patients, not one expressed fear of death itself. Not one. The terror we carry about our final moments, it belongs entirely to the living. For those actually facing death, it makes perfect sense, like breathing underwater makes sense to fish. Disease and age prepare us in ways we don't recognize. Julie hosted champagne and shitting parties during her colon cancer battle, laughing through the absurdity. When she finally chose peace over more treatments, her blue eyes held no fear, only relief. Lionel, at 92, called to announce he was stopping dialysis. "I feel happy about it. I feel relieved." Most people are ready for death the way we're ready for sleep after an exhausting day. What the dying fear isn't their own ending. It's whether those they leave behind will be okay. Stop planning and start being. Your dying loved one doesn't need your catastrophizing. They need you here, now, treating them like the fully alive person they still are. Assume they hear everything. When anxiety about tomorrow creeps in, pull yourself back to this moment. Take them on mental vacations through memory. Ask about their first kiss, their funniest moment, that unforgettable vacation. These conversations lift people above their suffering into something transcendent. Even with his father's Alzheimer's, Leader treasured watching Blazing Saddles until tears streamed down their faces. Here's permission you might need. Laugh. Death is serious, but laughter affirms life. When mourners share funny stories, healing begins. The dying need reassurance you'll be okay. Tell them they succeeded, they can rest, you'll take care of each other. After families give this blessing, death often arrives within hours, peaceful, barely there, then gone. Death doesn't transform anyone. It reveals who they've always been. People fantasize that terminal diagnoses will heal broken relationships, that difficult parents will suddenly become warm. They won't. Leader's father and uncle exemplified this. Business partners whose rivalry escalated until a sign reading "Leader v. Leader" hung on an arbitration room door. Their competition continued until death, each waiting for the other to die first. When Paul, dying from his third cancer, worried about not starting a journal for his children, Leader asked if he'd ever journaled before. He hadn't. He'd always preferred experiencing life over writing about it. So why become someone different now? The tough remain tough, the funny find humor even in death, the loving remain loving. This isn't pessimism, it's liberation. Making peace with death means accepting what cannot change. If you want to die according to your values, plan now. Appoint advocates who can speak for you when you can't. Though 80% of Americans say they want to die at home, most don't, because saying isn't planning. Tara's body had become a prison. ALS had transformed the kick-ass attorney into someone who couldn't speak, move, or point to letters. When Leader arrived, he saw the markers of her shrinking world: wheelchair ramp, pill bottles, hospital bed. She'd researched California's End of Life Option Act and wanted his permission to take the pills. Jewish tradition forbids active euthanasia. But watching Tara struggle for breath, like a fish on land, Leader faced an impossible choice between Rabbi Leader and Steve Leader, between religious teaching and human compassion. "Tara, you should take the pills," he finally said. In that moment, he violated my faith and confirmed my humanity. Mark described administering the medication to his suffering father Ted, mixing it, returning to the room, watching Ted quickly consume the final vial. Within minutes, Ted was gone. These stories force us to ask, when does prolonging life become prolonging death? When does mercy require letting go? There are no easy answers, only the weight of love and the unbearable burden of watching someone suffer. Creating a eulogy means brewing a big stew of stories, happy, sad, funny, embarrassing, sweet, and bitter all mixed together. Leader starts with simple questions about birth and childhood, then moves toward intimacy. Do you remember the first second you laid eyes on each other? Spouses transport back to when they first fell in love, while adult children often discover their parents' early passion with surprise. He asks what made their loved one happy, how they would have spent a responsibility-free day 20 years ago. Then comes the crucial question, what wasn't so perfect about him? This truth-telling validates complex feelings rather than sanitized versions. When families trust him with the complete story, including flaws, it lifts the weight of secrets. Sometimes families hide painful truths. Once, he arrived at a funeral only to learn the deceased had died during autoerotic asphyxiation while cross-dressing, information the sons concealed. Had they trusted him, he could have helped them process it while maintaining dignity. The eulogy he felt most privileged to write was for his own father. Despite how draining this work can be, guiding families through their stories has taught him that life and love are essentially about time. Time spent consciously, deliberately, lovingly together. After burying over 1,000 people, here's what headstones reveal. Nobody's net worth, GPA, resume, or Instagram likes ever appear. Instead, the same simple truths repeat. Loving husband, father, friend. Loving wife, mother, sister. When houses burn, people grab people, pets, and pictures. Photos win bronze because they're irreplaceable. Yet we spend lives acquiring meaningless things. As my friend Deborah said after her mother died, nobody wants your crap. The COVID-19 pandemic forced a global pause that freed many to study, walk, and spend sacred time with loved ones. An older ham radio operator calculated he had about 1,000 Saturdays left, bought 1,000 marbles, and removed one weekly. There is nothing like watching your time here on Earth run out to help get your priorities straight. Memory is the quintessential human act, not instinctual like animals, but willful, summoning the past into the present and bringing the dead back to life. An elderly woman named Sophia asked Leader to display her 1840 Giuseppe Scarbi violin in a glass case after she and her son died. Years later, he learned violins die if not played. They need regular use to maintain their tone. Rather than just displaying it, they now play Sophia's violin at special moments, honoring the deeper truth. We must actively remember our loved ones, or they suffer a second, more permanent death. The dead speak through everyday objects, worn Pyrex measuring cups revealing years of pancakes made with love. In his father's eulogy, Leader captured essence through small moments, the frugality, wisdom, surprising compassion. Despite harshness, his father taught persistence and enjoyment of each moment. Dementia, ironically, sharpened memory of who he truly was. Roller rink sundaes, butter brittle ice cream, sweetness at his core. To be remembered is to live beyond death.